Button lady. You're on, Sharon.
Hi, good afternoon, good evening, good morning, wherever you're calling in from. Welcome to the Beacon Group's new step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Sharon. I'm a recovered alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speaker, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence. Serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you are new to AA or new to the Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you are new or not so new and you're looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except when the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you may find our AA quote of the day. The quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, and then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure that your environment is quiet and free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lord's Prayer. And I have asked Oneida, to read the 12 steps. Let me know if I said that correctly, hon.
You sure did. Hi, my name is Oneida, and I am an alcoholic. The 12 steps on how it works, chapter 5 of the Big Book. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God, as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him. Praying only for the knowledge will for us in the heart to carry out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Today we will hear a talk on steps 8 and 9, and I'll just emphasize them again. Step 8 is made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Step 9, made direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure those or others. Please give a warm welcome to Cynthia from Jersey. We'll be speaking today. Go ahead, Cynthia. Thanks for being here. Can you unmute?
Okay, there I am. Hi, everybody. My name is Cynthia. I'm an alcoholic. And thank you, everyone, for doing service here and the attendees, of course. So this meeting still continues. My sobriety date is March 17th, 1994. My home group is the Atlanta group, which I'll be leaving for New York shortly after this meeting, after I pick up the milk and cookies, as that's my weekly task. Apparently they're cheaper in New Jersey than in New York. And I have a sponsor, and I have the privilege of sponsoring other women who sponsor women, and we keep this thing going. So I have a lot of understanding with this step today, thank God, because I've had some real horrific amends that I had to make in sobriety. They were really scary. And the reason why they were so scary is because I wasn't making them. Like, I was, all the drama in my life was created by myself, and holding off and putting off those last few major amends caused a lot of undue harm to myself and to my family as well by putting that off. Without jumping into the specifics of steps 8 and 9, and anything that may even sound remotely familiar that I may say today that isn't directly from the big book, it was probably heard on the Beacon Group or heard from my sponsor or another great meeting where I may have jotted down a note, because I've heard so many great tidbits over the years, and this program's amazing because it could literally help in all of our affairs, as the book promises. But you know what we're taught here is, and I really believed, I have to give a 2-minute recap to the steps prior, because they say those first three steps were getting ourselves right with God, right? That first step, they say, is the only one, you know, that you need to do perfectly. You don't have to do any of them perfectly, but it's step one is the only one that we can do perfectly. There's absolutely no way we could do any others perfectly. But we make a great attempt on a daily basis. And then those steps 4, 5, 6, 7, which you probably had a great speaker yesterday and Friday and Thursday talking about those four steps, they're getting us right with ourselves, you know. And then steps 8 and 9, we're going to get ourselves right with our fellow men out there, you know. And thank God that I had a great foundation and understanding of these steps, because those 88% of amends that I did go ahead and make, you know, I really did feel those benefits and rewards that they talk about in the 9th step promises, where it says, if we're painstaking, you know, we're going to be amazed before halfway through with what our steps, you know. And actually, if we even look at that word, and by the way, well, my computer's on top of it, but it's very helpful when you go on Amazon or whatever, and or a old library or bookstore, and find a dictionary from the 1930s, so we can look up some of those definitions, because the things that we think those words mean, they may not necessarily have had those exact meanings when Bill Wilson was writing this book, because painstaking was one of those words that I didn't know really what it meant, but careful, diligent, paying careful attention to. But it also, in a dictionary, it refers to a word called assiduous. And what assiduous means is constant in application. So this means this step is going to be constant in our lives. We're always going to be active with this. And two words that are obviously part of these steps are amend, you know, meaning to fix, to mend, but also there are people, and the word is in here, but some people confuse the word sorry, or, you know, that I'm going to apologize and say I'm sorry to the people that I've caused harm to. Now, if you looked up the word sorry in a 1930s dictionary, it says feeling regret for the loss of some good. Well, that doesn't sound like I'm making an amends to anybody, but, you know, feeling sorry for myself, basically, because I lost something. I'm feeling regretful over, but how is that fixing the relationship or whatever harm I inflicted on others? So again, if we're looking at all of those prior steps, they're very important to be, you know, clicked into this program. Now, before I dive back into 8 and 9, I also want to just, and you're going to hear probably great speakers on Wednesday and Thursday talking about 10 and 11. So if there's any day counters here, after you read the 9th step promises, which start on page 83 and 84, it goes right into steps 10 and 11, which basically are instructions for anybody, whether they're afflicted with alcoholism, drug addiction, gambling, sex, or just a normal person like most of the people in my family were. Those are really great directions to live out life, you know, and especially steps 11. Step 11, it talks about prayer, you know. So if we're praying from our first day in recovery, and even the strongest agnostic has to admit that there was some prayer time in their life, because did anybody ever like pray while they're looking in the rearview mirror while the cops are chasing you down, or when we got pulled over, you know, or did my husband find out, you know, did that person call him and tell him about that affair? Did the teacher just catch me cheating? Uh-oh, she's walking over towards me and I have this cheat sheet crumpled up in my hand. Did the store clerk just see me put that candy in my pocket? God, please help me. Please help. Every single occasion was like, oh God, you know, what am I going to do? And probably the worst of it was, you know, in the bathroom the night of or the next morning. God, please get rid of this headache. Let me get, you know, my stomach settled so I could go back to work or get to the job or whatever it is, you know. So prayer, big, big, big thing. So now, yesterday's speaker probably mentioned that there is two paragraphs for steps 6 and 7. And those steps are huge. Character defects, you know, like humbly asking. Big, big, big. But after those two paragraphs come 8 pages, 76 to 84, on these two steps. So what is in 8 pages? I'm going to wrap it up right here and tell you. There is a lot of direction. The book is telling us exactly what to do on all of these matters, whether it be returning money, lying to an employer, cheating. You know, there's a couple of paragraphs on cheating on your spouse, amends that we can't make because they can't be reached. And probably they're referring to people that are dead. It's all direction, but mixed in with a lot of those directions are prayers. You know, when we see the word ask, that means we're asking God. That's a prayer. There's a lot of promises in here. If we do this, we're going to get this. But in the same note, there's a lot of warnings. If we do this, we're going to get this. Or if we don't do this, we're going to get this. So if we start looking at these pages and doing deep dives in here, we're going to find a lot of juice that we're going to run on. So I just want to bring a couple of things from the book before I talk about specifically how these steps are working in my life, even just today. But we know that the book has, and don't hold me to this number, but maybe 103 of the word must, like things that we have to do. I have this note in here, 103, so it's probably given to me from somebody else. But so if we're going through here and we're going to take some direction, I want to just pull out a couple of things. On page 76, It tells us, you know, we're going to find a lot of the people that we have to make amends to from our fourth step. It says, oh, we have that list from when we took inventory. But it also, it's going to say, and I just want to bring this to your attention. It says, we subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. So that's almost exact words from the third step when it's talking to us in the chapter, how it works. And then if we haven't the will to do this, and this is our eighth step prayer, we ask until it comes. Because if you owed as much money as I owed and as much money as my sponsor owed, we don't want to make these amends. We want to kind of skirt by with not making them. And I'm going to tell you what happened to me. And then it says, and I put my name in there, remember, Cynthia, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory or defeat over alcohol. So, and that's in italics. So basically, what does any lengths now at this point in my recovery, because they mention it more than once. So basically, I'm putting on a private detective hat because I don't want to leave out anything. I don't want anything to wake me up in the middle of the night. I don't want to have to walk down the street and turn down a corner, you know, to avoid someone. And these are all things that I was plagued with, especially waking up in the middle of the night. So anyway, now I'm going to bring in some of my personal situations. So, all right, I've been sober 29 years. I started working at a restaurant 2 years before I got sober. So just imagine what those 2 years probably look like. And then I get sober and then I work there for another 15 years. So I'm not going to draw a timeline for you, but of those 15 years sober, I do with my first fifth step, like say in my fifth year of recovery. I know it sounds crazy, but back then in Hoboken, we had don't drink and go to meeting kind of meetings. So we weren't talking about four and five and certainly not talking about going out there and making amends. It was literally don't drink and go to meetings. So I'm not, so my behavior has not changed for 5 years. So now I'm working there 7 years, just imagine. So now I tell my sponsor what I was up to. Now I go back to the restaurant and I sit down with two of my coworkers who I was working with for many years. And I'm telling them what I'm going to have to do, which could implicate them. So somewhere in the book, and I don't have it right here, but it's in these pages, it says, except when to do so would injure them or others. But it basically says we can't implicate other people. So as I'm talking to these two people, they are ready to like Jeffrey Epstein me, you know, to like kill me off because they don't want me to start talking and divulging some of their secrets. You know what I mean? Because I'm going to get us all fired. We're all still working together. So they tell me absolutely not. So I can't make that amends to my employer as I continue to work there. Now, my sponsor is not my babysitter. She doesn't care if I want my girls to make their amends, but I'm not going to chase all of them down to make sure they're making their amends. They know what's to come if they do, and now they know what's to come if they don't. And I can only share my experience with them, just like my sponsor did with me. So the years go by, and guess what? Management changed. And now, oops, Cynthia and her bad behavior and everybody else's, we're under a microscope with the new manager and the inevitable. And thank you, God, I get fired. So I make an amends to this, the guy, you know, the new management. I thought it was easy. It was easy enough. And it was scary. But it was a short amends, basically. The other manager who owned the, you know, company was many years in the making. I was afraid to death to make my amends to him because he was a politician. I was afraid he would use me as an example, have me imprisoned. So all the other restaurants and bar owners would know, like, you know, this is what happened to me. So you better take care of your employee, you know, look after your employee. I didn't know what, I mean, the thoughts I had going on in my head were like insanity. So anyway, what happens? I am living in financial fear for all of these years in my sobriety, every single day. Do you know how many like years I probably shaved off my life due to, and wrinkles added and gray to the worry and the struggles that I had, all because of that, because I was deathly afraid of facing this employer. Well, I will tell you this, after getting let go by that sponsor, and maybe a sponsor or two after that, because once we get to those steps, I am unwilling to do the work. I just neglect it. Uh-oh, did I just, oh, I don't know what I just did. But anyway, I am living in this sphere and going through sponsors. Now I'm in my 20th year of sobriety, okay? So, and this is where I'm gonna wrap in my three major, and I'm sorry for those who have heard me speak before. These are my three major amends, 20 years sobriety. I'm with a sponsor who I never wanted to ask her to be my sponsor. I never really cared for her, but I was at the end of my rope. I didn't know who else to ask, so I asked her. And something was changing with me. She really was making me, she was making me, having me focus on steps 6 and 7, actually. And I was really observing how my character defects and my fears were driving my life. And it was never so apparent as it was in that year. Well, that year, we had to put my mom into a nursing home. I had three last amends, my mom, my brother, and the former employer. So now, I don't know what happened. My mother had a stroke and she turned childlike, and all of my resentment towards my mother must have faded away on its own, watching my mother disintegrate like this, you know? And I started having empathy. I don't know if that's a proper word, but I started really caring about my mother like never before. And it really felt good being there with her every day. And you know what really felt good was that now my sisters could count on me and rely on me, because they didn't live a mile away from the nursing home like I did. And now I'm able to check in with my sisters. It's almost like I'm a grown-up now, you know, 47 years old at that point, you know, and I could be relied on. It really, really made me feel good. And one day I'm sitting on my mom's nursing home bed, and it's not like I had to consult with my current sponsor on how to make amends. So I decided that this was the best time. You know, obviously every day now is I'm enmeshed with God, and I made my amends to my mom. And how I did that was with instructions, obviously, from the book, because I had a lot of experience with other amends. And I said, Mom, now, meanwhile, really quick, my mom had four girls and I was the baby. And then she had a baby boy who she wanted so badly. She wanted a boy so bad, and she babied that boy. And I resented her and I resented him for that. So I said, Mom, I know. And I caused a lot of trouble in my family with my brother, trust me. And I said, I know I was not a great daughter to you, and I caused a lot of problems in the family because of Bobby. And if I could go back, I wish I could, you know, I would do things differently. But I want you to know that I am truly sorry for that. And if there's anything that I could do to fix this, you know, please let me know. And my brother has already been like, he's so far gone with his drug addiction and alcoholism. You know, I don't think there's anything that could have been done at that point. And, you know, and I admitted some other faults to her that were pretty always glaring, you know? And, I said, is there anything that I could do, Mom, like today, moving forward, to make this right with you? And she said, she asked for one request, and she said, Cynthia, I had five kids. I loved all of you equally, and I just want you to believe that. Now, my mind, because it's so sick, wants to think otherwise, but my heart is saying, let your mother off the hook and let her know that you believe her. And I said, of course, Mom, I know you do. I know you love all of us equally. And I left there and I was able to talk about that with my current sponsor and my previous sponsor, who knew all of the dramas for many years of sponsoring me. And, you know, from that day forward, I was like, I couldn't wait to see my mom. There was not one day that went by that I wasn't by my mom's side up until that last breath when we took her off of life support. Me and my sisters and I were there together to see her off with Frank Sinatra playing in the background, you know. She died on a Friday. Her burial, her wake was Monday, Martin Luther King Monday. And my brother showed up and he was, you know, drunk or whatever. And my sponsor came down from Boston. She was there with her daughter. And I had people from the Atlanta group there, people from down the shore where I live, people from my high school. Like, there were so many people there, like, to support me. And, you know, there was my brother drunk and irritating. And I was just, you know, ready to, and I turned around and I mouthed off to him. And his friend saw, you know, that this was going to get explosive. And Eddie came and took Bobby out. And that was, you know, probably the best thing. The next day for the burial, my brother didn't show up. And this is so weird because for decades in my head, I fantasized how this was all going to plan out. How was my brother going to be at the, like, it was so sick and distorted in my head. Well, it was a Tuesday when we buried my mom, and I, New York was right there across the river. I wanted to go to be with my people at my home group, but I had my dad with me and he lived with me and I had to bring him back to Asbury Park. So I wasn't going to see my people. I came home. I'm in my chair, and the woman who I said I didn't particularly care for that sponsored me that last, the year before, she called me because she knew what I was going through. And I talked to her for a few minutes, and then I called my brother, and I had several numbers for him over the years of my cell phone. The first one I called, it was his, and he answered. And the way he talked was so, like, kind of brain, like, you know, he probably had, you know, wet brain or whatever. And he was stuttering and he was like, sin, 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 sin. And at first I was like, where were you today? Like typical Cynthia. And he was like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And then I realized I'm talking to a sick person just like me, you know? And I said, hey, Bob, you know, do you want to go to a rehab? Do you want to go to a detox? And he was like, no, no, no. And I said, all right, Bob. And I said, listen, there's something I wanted to talk to you about. And I said, I was a real crappy sister growing up, man. I was not a great big sister. And I know that today, Bob. And I said the same thing, you know, if I could just go back and redo it, man, I would do things different. And I asked him, you know, is there anything that I could do to make things different? And, you know, he didn't really have much to say, but I said to him, Bob, if you want to make a change, if you want to do something different, if you want to get help, I'll send the troops. You know, I got a lot of friends in Hoboken because he lived near there. And he was like, all right. And we hung up and I kind of knew it, but, you know, that was the last time that I talked to my brother. That was January of in 2017. My dad died in November, and then my brother died the following February alone. From alcoholism, not even from drugs, you know, and that day, and I want to talk about this, that day that the cops came to my door here, and I knew it was Bobby because my parents were gone, and I had the cops at my house a lot, you know, and my father and mother would get into accidents and whatnot, and I said, it's my brother, I know my brother's dead, and he said, we have to call this number, and we called the number, and the cop up in North Jersey said, yes. And I said, was it drugs? And he said, no. Well, not that we know of. It was a lot of alcohol. And I said, where does my brother live? We didn't even have his address. He gave me the address and he said to me, I would wear a hazmat suit if you go there. I didn't even know what a freaking hazmat suit was yet, you know, because it wasn't, there was no COVID yet. So the next day I'm driving up there. Oh, first off, I have an ex-boyfriend that showed up my house drunk. I never saw him drunk before. I didn't know what to do with him. I had to call up a rehab. I called up many people, but my friend Jimmy got him into a rehab in Florida where his friend Peter has a rehab. I put it on my credit card and there, you know, I got Walter to a rehab. So the next day I dropped Walter off at the airport. I go to the apartment where three sisters are at. They're waiting for me. Three husbands. The fourth husband was my ex-husband. And the fifth guy there was another ex-boyfriend of mine, Charlie. They were there to support me. The guys all went up into the house together. Me and the girls were outside. The guys come out and they're devastated at what they saw. Obviously, Bobby wasn't there. He had already been taken away the day before. But they were like, girls, you don't have to go up in there. Then a minute later, it dawned on me. I am no different than my brother. And I always thought I was. I always thought I was better than my brother. And the worst part was all those years in recovery. I smushed it in my brother's face that he couldn't get sober. So I walked back upstairs. I don't remember if it was Mike or Charlie that came with me up those stairs. There was bugs, the smell. He lived in squalor. The bathroom hadn't been used. God only knows how long. It was packed. He lived like a pat rack. And I saw what alcoholism looked like to a family member, my blood brother. And I realized what my alcoholism could look like, and that I am just like all of you, one drink away from that. So when I am told what to do, when these things crop up, like in the 10th step and the 11th step, when it talks about life on life's terms, things crop up, what I'm told, what I'm supposed to do is make direct amends where possible. Now, you know, when I talked about that restaurant before, that 20th year when I was being sponsored by that woman who I didn't particularly care for, I had to go speak up in Hoboken at a morning meeting, and it was a beautiful sunny day. And I'm like, I'm going to be sitting in traffic going back to the beach. And I made another attempt to that restaurant owner. And I had made attempts earlier over the years, but his wife had gotten brain cancer and then it came back and then she died. I saw him at the funeral. I saw him at a mutual friend's wedding. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it. And I text him. As soon as I hit send, my phone rang. It was him. And he was like, Cynthia, great. I'd love to meet you for lunch. And I'm like, oh my God, it's going to happen. So I called up that current sponsor, unavailable. I called up my old sponsor from Boston, wasn't there. I called up a woman, Mary Beth, who sponsored me down here for a short time, who knew the story. Not many people knew about the story with the restaurant. I called up Mary Beth. She said, pull out your big book. Of course, you know, we keep them in our car and we're reading, we're praying together. And she's like, you could do this. I went in there into the restaurant, sat down, sat across the table. He updated me on his kids and, you know, his daughter got married, blah, 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 blah. And then he's like, so Cynthia, how much money did you steal from me? And I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. It's going to come out now. At first, I got really scared. I looked down. I was crying. I was shaking. He said, I'm going to walk out of here. And I was like, God, please give me the words. Please give me the words. And I there it was. And I had the opportunity. And Dave is a very wealthy man. Very, very wealthy. What would that money mean to him? Absolutely nothing. But what he gave me was an opportunity to pass it forward. He was like, Cynthia, just keep doing what you're doing. And however you see fit, that's how you're going to pay me back. I, up to 20 years of sobriety, I was such a stingy, cheap, selfish person. Because of that conversation, I turned into a normal human being. I'm not throwing money out the window, obviously, but all of a sudden I see where God has given me these opportunities. A couple of years later, I was bartending in Long Branch or Seabright with a guy who was stealing, and I knew he was stealing. And then we caught him on camera stealing, and the owners weren't going to do anything because he was valuable to them. I was so pissed, and I called up my sponsor, and I'm like spewing to her and whatever, and she said, "Cynthia, guess what? That money isn't yours to begin with. God has another plan for that money. And you want to know something? A couple, 2 days later, when I was back in the restaurant, my manager said to me, 'Oh, you're going to work with someone else this weekend because Bo isn't going to be here for a while.' Or, and I said, 'What happened?' He said, 'Oh, over the weekend, it was Bo's birthday. He got his ass kicked. Broken eye socket, ribs, whatever. He's going to be out of work for a while.' I'm like, oh, what did for, Bo, what God did for me many years ago, he hit his bottom. And guess what? Bo is sober today. And I just spoke for him on the eighth tradition a couple weeks ago. I mean, thank you. Thank you to sponsorship. Thank you to this beautiful big book with all the instructions. Thank you to this meeting and for the invite. I appreciate it. Can't wait for the breakout rooms. Thank you.